This is the February 22nd edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists include Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Dale Durkles is here as well, AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois. Our guest today, Eric Rund, Champaign County, Illinois farmer and a Southern Hemisphere landowner. And a longtime friend of the radio station, WILL. Eric, thanks so much for being with us. A couple of weeks ago when we had Dr. Cordonier on the air, you listened to that program and said, hey, I've been to Brazil and just got back. What he says is true, but you have some different perspective because you'd really been out into the depths and seen some of the clearing of lands and all sorts of things that have to do with production agriculture just beginning to come up there.
Yes, Don, thanks for inviting me. I happened to be invited to go to Brazil by a group of farmers that had been up to visit our farm back in 2010. And out of the blue, he sent me an email saying he wanted to come down and travel with me while I do my rounds. And this fellow is an agronomist and a consultant. We visited about 10 of his clients. Well, this was the first time I did go to Brazil with no group to shepherd around, and so I got to visit a lot more in-depth and in areas that I would never have gotten to go to had I had a group with me. And my first impression, by the way, this time we were in more of the eastern bean belt and through Bahia, a little, and Tocantins, Maranhão, Piauí to the north, and areas that I'd never been to before. And my opinion, first blush, was things look pretty good. Of course, farmers are never happy, and they said, well, we had a dry start, and we don't think it's going to be as good as it could have been, which probably was true. But the beans look pretty good. The corn certainly looked good to me, just starting to tassel, and the rains had just come on. So there's going to be the first time I've ever visited Brazil when I thought there was going to be 200 bushel corn that I'd seen. And I asked them, well, how, you know, what's your management on this? Because before, fertilizer seemed to be too expensive to haul in, but these guys were putting on 180 pounds of nitrogen and 80 pounds of phosphorus and 100 pounds of potassium, and this is 200 bushel corn. So that impressed me, and it kind of scared me a little bit, too, because I'm a corn farmer. I always thought we'd be growing the corn in the U.S. and let those guys produce the beans, but they're learning how to grow corn, too, and they're doing a good job of it.
In your view of what is taking place down in Brazil, because I know they still have a huge, huge amount of land that they can fully develop. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they really are going to be a competitor? Because I know, like over in Mato Grosso, where we've had all the soybean expansion, they double crop corn behind beans now and are doing it successfully. And do you think this is going to be a more common practice up across that northern and maybe even eastern band?
Yeah, I've got my trips have been in past to Mato Grosso. I've got a number of friends there, and I emailed one before I came in today, and he said we're halfway through with our bean harvest. It's yielding about 55-60 bushel of the acre, and at the same time our corn planters are running. We're going to plant 80% of our land will go back into corn, and that's unusual because in the past he's more like in that 30% range. So they're reacting to a high market. There's no doubt about that. I can see that. On the east side, a lot of beans never got planted as first crop beans. They got a late start, so rather than try to put in a second crop of corn, they just planted 140-day corn right from the get-go, and that's why they're going to see higher yields there mostly. So, high prices are the best fertilizer. I forget what Earl Butt said that, right? And those guys, they take that to heart. You offer $7 corn in the world, and somebody's going to grow it, and these guys have taken that to heart, yeah. So the other thing I noticed, though, that they're having troubles, mainly on the insect side in soybeans. I had visited every farm we'd visited in this trip. They were in that sixth or seventh spraying already between herbicide, fungicide, insecticide. And insecticides were just eating the beans. They had gone through the gamut of the chemical activity on these insecticides, and the ones insecticides that were actually doing any good, they were hard to get and get in a timely manner. The guys were just spraying day and night. And I asked the consultant what he thought of this, and is it this normal? He said, no, this has gotten worse in the last 2 or 3 years to where something management-wise, he thought, we're going to have to do some changes because you'd probably be able to kill them if you keep spraying, but it's going to be uneconomical to do so.
So has the management changed the double crop to corn to try to control insects? Does that do one of them? And I don't know whether that without much of a winter season, because you're in the mm-hmm. eastern part, right? Mm-hmm. So you're really far north. You're much closer to the equator there.
Rotation will certainly be part of it, and a logical choice there would be corn or cotton. They grow a lot of cotton there too, but yeah, get a break in the cycle, and that'll certainly help them. These were his thoughts, but you could tell farmers weren't sleeping well. You got a good crop of beans out there, and something's eating it up, and you can't control it. You're thinking ahead, what am I going to do the next time around to prevent this? So, but their handling as far as getting the crop out, we say, well, there's dirt roads, that's poor infrastructure, which it is, but we were driving on these roads in a downpour. You can get across them. The soil is so sandy, and the road's crowned a little bit, you just keep going. It's not as nice, certainly, but a big crop, they can move it. It costs them $1 a bushel, maybe a little more than that, but they can move it. And they're getting the job done. There's few problems with truckers now. The government has placed a limit on the number of hours they can drive. That's going to slow things down, make it more expensive, if you will. But on the flip side, we drove across and alongside the North-South Railroad that's, as far as we could tell, is complete. In fact, I asked why aren't they running trains, and a couple of guys says, well, it's not quite done on one end, and it's more of a political thing. I don't know what's holding it up from running trains, but that's here. It's coming. And it'll affect us. One guy illustrated it to me. We're going to be able to take beans and corn to a port that's 2,000 miles closer to the Panama Canal than the port at Santos is now. So that'll reduce the cost of getting beans to China is what that means. And so that's going to make their prices better to the farmer. It'll make our prices better. Where our little farm is in southern Africa, Tocantins, we're 40 miles from the railroad. That's going to be a big help for us.
Mike?
I wanted to find out, Eric, your thoughts on gauging how serious or how long this port strike with Santos and Paranagua could last, and kind of the context that Lula just kicked off, the former President Lula just kicked off the re-election campaign of Rousseff. Rousseff is trying to privatize the ports. This is what's ignited this port strike this weekend. Would you think this has got legs to it, or is this just a political thing? What's your insight on that?
Not very good. I would hate to venture a guess on how this will turn out. That always happens, of course, when they need the port the most. But the politics involved in that, I'm really not sure. And I would hate to venture a guess. It would probably be wrong. The desire, though, to increase exports is there. There'll be a new port at the end of this railroad line. And there's talk of other new ports. This rail line will go east-west as well. There's another leg in the works. So Brazil is serious about gearing up on exports. There's no doubt about that. So it'll get resolved one way or the other. May not be some people happy, but it'll get resolved.
Eric, thank you so much for taking the time with
sure.
us today. Eric Rund, Champaign County, Illinois farmer and Southern Hemisphere landowner. Now time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Dale Durkles.
You know, the one thing I think farmers need to really take to heart was the soybean performance on Friday, and really watch closely in this coming week. That could have meant the end of the winter rally.
And Mike Zuzulo?
Well, I know we were all wanting a wheat bottom here, Todd, but I'll have to say, too, that the Deese corn, I wonder how much more negativity we can throw at this market with very little weather premium and a 2.1 billion bushel carryover now being traded. I wonder if that Deese corn is not near a bottom, if the wheat can get a bottom in it, too.
Our thanks to Mike Zuzlo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Dale Durkles from AgriVisor right there in Bloomington, Illinois, for joining us on this February 22nd edition of Commodity Week. You can always hear it again on our website at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.